So this text called Gyan Sar, which we had started a few months ago, and we will be on the 8th verse today, but I thought I'll just summarize because we have missed a few weeks. So this text started with the student who has enjoyed the world. He has accomplished whatever financial goals, family, social, whatever he needed. But he finds that life is still incomplete. He says, I have enjoyed everything, but then what? What is my goal? What is my purpose? First, he used to think that the world is for my enjoyment, you know, for me to have fun. And then he realizes, no, there is more than that. There is a creator. There is the Lord who has created this world, and I should worship him by serving the world. So he's slowly evolving from an enjoyer to a devotee, where he now loves God, he loves the world, and he says, I need to serve it. But then still his doubt is not resolved. I mean, he has developed the love, and that is beautiful, that is very nice. But his fundamental question of who am I, where did I come from, where am I going to go after death, who is this Lord that has created this universe, I love him, but what is his real nature, where is he, how can I find him? What is this world? What is my relationship with this world? What is my relationship with God? And why am I on this earth? Why have I appeared? So these are the questions that were raised by the student. And he approaches the teacher, humbly bows down and serves the teacher and asks these questions. And so the teacher, having found a fit student who not only has the desire, but he has also purified his mind. So purity of mind is very important. I mean, you may have doubts, but the knowledge will not arise unless your mind is free of impurities. If you have a lot of impurities like greed and jealousy and selfishness and hatred, then such an individual cannot approach the truth. He may approach it, and he may even listen to the teacher, but the knowledge will not have effect. Because as long as these impurities are there, my actions will be towards the world, acquiring, possessing, because I want this, I want that. So the first step for an individual is to purify his mind, remove the negative tendencies, and develop positive tendencies, which we had done in the book before this called Manashodhanam. We did it in detail where the teacher taught us how to purify the mind. So having purified the mind and having approached the teacher last time when we had met, the teacher says that this, in verse number 7, he says, whatever is seen, whatever you can see is inert. Whatever I can see, the world of objects, emotions, thoughts, my body, my mind, my intellect, everything is inert. The only thing sentient or having life is the consciousness, which they call as Atma, which is the substratum, which is the self. And it is said that the self or the consciousness is the only thing that is inert. Everything else is the only thing that is sentient. Everything is inert. Now, what is the nature of this self? Who is this self, or what we call as the consciousness? Also, in this book, it is called as Atma. So, what is the nature of this self? We shall study today, because that is what we need to reach. We have already seen the world, which we know is inert, and is only alive or functioning because of the presence of consciousness, which you can also call as God, call as Brahman, call as Father in heaven, but that the total consciousness, here they refer to it as Atma or the self. So now we shall study a little more today about the nature of this illumining principle that is within all of us, which is called Atma or the self. Verse number 8 on page 27. Atma hi nityo khakiloka sakshi. Atma hi nityo khaliloka sakshi. स एव जगतः परमाश्रयोऽपि एवं विजानन् सदसद्विवेकी भवति ह सिद्धः परमार्थदर्शी So here I have kind of outlined or just covered the main points in this verse. He says, Atma, the self, what are the qualities of the self? And then what are the qualities of an individual who knows, who has reached, who has accomplished? So then we can see that how far are we from the truth, and that will become a goal or a guideline for all of us to reach. So he says the Atma, which is the self, the consciousness within all of us, it is Nitya. Nitya means permanent, ever present. Akhil Loka Sakshi. It is Akhil means the total, Lok means the world, the total universe, Sakshi. Sakshi means the witness. Here the universe does not only mean the physical world that I can perceive. You know, I can perceive this universe which goes for trillions of miles. But there is also the world of emotions. You know, I can know my emotions. I can know the object. I can know the table. But I can also know whether I am happy or unhappy. So my emotions also are witnessed by the consciousness. Even my thoughts, my ideas, my concepts. You know, next year I'm going to do this, and then these are my plans, and this is how I'm going to make this building. An architect plans the building, or an engineer plans a factory. So all that I'm visualizing in the past what happened, what is happening now, and what I think will happen in the future, everything is known to that one consciousness, which we call as God's presence. Not only the world of the thoughts, emotions, and physical worlds, but also other worlds. All the scriptures talk about various heavens, higher worlds of, you know, where good people go and enjoy. And then worlds called hells, where, you know, the people who have committed evil deeds have to pay their. And in our scriptures, they describe 14 worlds, 7 heavens above us. And depending on your level of goodness, you get higher and higher worlds. And there you enjoy your good deeds and then you come back. And similarly, there are 6 hells below us where, again, people who have committed evil deeds, depending on the level of their negativity, they get different hells and then they come back to continue their journey. So, Akhila Loka, so all the worlds, even the heavens, even the hells, even the thoughts, emotions, everything is known to that one self. This self or consciousness is one. It is the same in all of us. It's not that her consciousness and his consciousness. There is one total consciousness called Atma. And when it's identified in an individual, we call it Atma. But when it is identified with the totality, it can be called Paramatma or the Supreme Consciousness, which is God. So he says it is Nitya, permanent, Akhil Loka Sakshi, witness of this entire universe. And Sa Eva, and even though it is the witness, Jagata Paramashrayopi, it is also the supreme support. Now, this seems to be an anomaly. Either you are a witness or you are a support. Right? You can't be both. But here they say it is both. So, we'll understand that. And then he says, evam vijanan, knowing this. Jnanan means to know. Vijanan means to know very well. So, not only knowing, but also having experienced. It is like I have read the recipe book, so I know how to cook. I can make anything. But then when you sit down to make, then you get confused, you know, because the recipe says make for 8 people, but I have to make for 6. So what do I do? And how much do I? So I get confused. So finally, I call my mother because she knows everything. And then she tells me how to cook. And so I sit down and cook. So having read, I have now actually cooked. So that is part. But then the third aspect of it is that when I eat that food and enjoy that, and the food becomes part of me, then you say, I have known the food, Vijanan. Until then, all you knew was the recipe, all you knew was the cooking. But when you actually experience the taste and you say, oh, food was burnt, I didn't do a very good job, then that is called Vijanan, that is called knowing. So here, when we say the knower, it is the one who has not only read about the scripture. See, you and I, we have read this book, you know, because Swamiji wrote it. And so we sit down and read, and then I prepare and come and talk about it, and then we, you know, discuss. But we don't really know it. We have intellectually understood it, but until you experience that truth within you as your true nature, only then you can be called a knower. Until then, you are a seeker. You are an intellectual seeker who has read, who has discussed, who may have understood intellectually. But until you experience that truth, till then you cannot be called a true knower. So you and I are at least on the path. At least we are trying to understand the truth and trying to reach it. But this seeker who has known it as his or her own self, what happens to him? He says he becomes sad asad viveki. He understands what is real and what is unreal. And here itself, again, this knowledge is not meant for after death. People say, after death, you know, I will meet God. I mean, what is the guarantee? You know, where you will be after death. So they say that if I want to experience, I want it here and now. So realization is not for next life or 10 lifetimes from now or after death. Maybe I go up in heaven and then God will come and carry me. I don't need that. I don't know that. Then I don't know. I won't be even there to enjoy that. So I want to realize here and now. I want to know God here and now. I want to meet him here and now. So he says, such a person, iha, here itself, bhavati, what does he become? He becomes siddha. Siddha means accomplished, who has accomplished a lot. And paramartha darshi, he becomes the seer of the absolute truth. So first we take the word nitya, means eternal. And what is eternal? When we say God is eternal, we say he was there in the past, he is there now, and he will be there in the future. So what we are doing is we are giving reality to time, that there was a thing called time, and in that time God was and is and will be. They say, no, that's not right. God was there even before time, even before the concept of time arose. How did time arise? When thought started, when the first thought was created and the second thought was created by the Creator, the Lord, then only the concept of time, because time is only a concept in our mind. In reality, when you go into deep meditation or when you go into samadhi, you go beyond time to that timeless zone. And people have stayed in meditation for months and years, and their body is preserved. Why? Because they have gone beyond time. It is only time that can destroy our body as we get older. But once you go beyond time into that zone of timeless, so the Lord is there before time, time arose in him. So to say that he was, is, and will be is also a misnomer. He is the illuminator of past, present, and future. That is clear, right? That it is eternal. Then it says, Akhila Loka Sakshi. He is the witness of the entire universe. What do we mean by witness? Now, in the court of law, suppose a murder was committed, you know, somebody shot somebody on the street, And then there was a person standing on the street corner, and she says, "I saw that man, you know, point the gun and shoot." Now she's called to the witness stand, and the first thing they ask her, "Are you related to any of these?" She says, "No, Your Honor, I don't know the one who shot, and I don't know the one who was shot. I just happened to be standing on the street corner." And they said, "Okay, then what did you see?" She says, "I saw that these two men get into an argument, and then this man pulled out a gun and shot him." And they said, can you clearly identify?" "Yep, I can clearly identify. There was good light. I saw this man," and she picks him out of a lineup. So that lady who is a witness is not involved in the shooting. She was never involved. She has no connection, but just silently was observing and happened to be there. So this consciousness is a witness, Akhilo, of the entire universe. As we said, not only the physical universe, the mental, the intellectual, the emotional, all the worlds are known to that one consciousness. God knows all of them. In fact, he even knows what I'm going to say before I have said it. That is the beauty of this consciousness, that even when the thoughts have not yet become words, in fact, in our scriptures, they have very beautifully talked about the states of speech. They said there is a pre-speech where the thoughts are very vague and slowly they are being crystallized. And as they are being crystallized, then, you know, finally the mind says, okay, this is what I'm going to say. And then it appears a speech, but that God knows even while the words are still not even crystallized, he knows what I'm going to say before I say it. So that is the beauty of that consciousness. So it says, Akhil Loka Sakshi. It is the witness of everything. A silent witness. They say, well, why doesn't God do something? You know, why there is so much violence going on and there is so much murder. What God did was that he created this universe and gave all the animals and birds and plants certain jobs to do. Humans were given the freedom to choose. And that is what he says, that you have the freedom. You can choose to become a saint or you can choose to become a criminal. But the law of karma was then placed so that every individual, based on their good and bad karmas, will suffer the consequences. Majority of the time in this life, if maybe a little bit, carries on to the next life. So even though he's the witness, he's not an impotent witness. He is totally aware of what is happening. And there is a law that he has instituted which takes care of everything. So he does not need to interfere. He does not need to do anything. He says, you guys keep on doing it. The human beings have the freedom. He has given us the scriptures and he sends the saints. And he himself comes in the form of saints and gurus to enlighten us and give us wisdom what we should do. But if we choose to ignore it, then we suffer the consequences. So he is a witness who is aware of everything. At the same time, he is the support. How can that be? You know, how can, like, the lady is not the support of that altercation where the shooting was. But the Lord is very unique in the sense that the whole universe emerged from that one consciousness, the one self. That's why they say, no, God alone was. And then he created the world in 6 days, and the seventh day he rested. The Bible even says that. So we say that he is the support of the universe, just as the ocean is the support of all the waves. Where did the waves arise? The waves arise in the ocean. They stay for a while. And then they merge back into the ocean. So the ocean is the support of the waves. So similarly, the Lord is the support of the whole universe. Everything arises in him, is sustained, and then merges back into that one consciousness. And this whole world also, you know, came and then will be around for a few billion years. And then ultimately the world will end and will merge back. And our scriptures say that after a few billion years of rest, then again the Creator will start. So ours is not the first. There have been many such universes before us which came, stayed for a few billion years, ended, and then came again. So this cycle is going on and on. Another way to look at it is that mud is the support of all the parts, right? All parts came out of mud, are sustained by mud, and ultimately when the pot breaks, it again becomes mud. Now, where is the mud sustained? In the earth. Where is the mud? In earth. Now, where is earth? Earth is in the air. You know, there is 100 miles of air around. Where is air? Air is in space. So, space supports the air. And this consciousness is even subtler than space. Even space was created by the Lord. That's why they say the world, when he created out of five elements, air, space, fire, water, and earth. So, even space is supported. So, everything that we see is illumined and supported. Illumined means given life. So, the life-giving principle is that consciousness. So, why should I know God? You know, what is the benefit of knowing God? Talking about knowing God, teacher asked the student, you know, where is God? So, all the students say, one says, God is in church. She said, okay, very good. The other one says, God is above the clouds. Oh, that's good. The third one says, God is in heaven, even way far away. She says, okay. So, one little boy says, God is in my bathroom. She says, what? God is in your bathroom? Why do you say God is in your bathroom? I mean, I understand he's everywhere. No, no, he's only in my bathroom. She says, why do you say that? She says, every morning when my sister is in the bathroom, my dad bangs on the door and says, oh my God, are you still in there? Anyway, so the wise person knows. What does he know? That this consciousness is everywhere, all pervading. God is everywhere. He's in the bathroom and he's in heaven and he's in hell and he's in church. He's everywhere. In fact, God is not even he. What we say is that, in fact, in Sanskrit, the word for God is neutral, because it is neither male nor female, because male and female are both forms. You know, like here also we have the male forms of God and then female forms of God. So, those are all forms that God takes for us to know and love. But in reality, this consciousness has no sex. That's why we call it, because it is the best way to talk about God. Even though traditionally we use the word he, but in reality, like electricity, it has no sex. Is electricity male or female? It is electricity. So, that is what we say. So, one who knows it, what happens? He becomes sad asad viveki. He knows what is real and what is unreal. Real is the support, unreal is the appearance. So, like in the case of the ocean and the ocean is real, the waves are unreal. The waves appear for a while and we think them to be separate from the ocean, but in reality, it is nothing but the ocean in giving a name and form. You can call it wave, you can call it whirlpool, you can call it current, you can call it, you know, different names you can give. But in reality, it is the one ocean with different names. Like the one mud, you can have a teapot and a kettle, but all of them, a blue pot, yellow pot, but they are all nothing but mud. So he knows. Or she knows, the wise person knows what is real and what is unreal, what is temporary and what is permanent. And as we had seen in the beginning of the book, he had gone through temporary things and they gave him temporary joy. And then he again went back to his world of suffering. So he says, I don't want that anymore. I want permanent joy. And so the teacher says, if you want permanent joy, look for it in permanent things. Look for it in the self. So, he comes to understand and he comes to know it, that the self within me is the real and that is my true nature. And we will come to that. And then he becomes Siddha. Siddha means accomplished. We think of Siddha in Sanskrit as somebody who can do miracles. You know, if you can walk on water, or you can, you know, change your form, or you can read people's mind, or you can predict the future, or you can see what is behind the wall. And there are in our scriptures, they describe, you know, siddhis, they describe powers like that. By doing enough meditation, you can get those powers. But the scriptures say that is not the real accomplishment. You may get that power, but so what? You know, where has it got you? Like, I think I told the story once before. I'll just tell it very briefly. There was this student of Ramakrishna Paramhans. Ramakrishna Paramhans was a great saint. And the student said, I don't want to learn all this knowledge. I want to get powers. He said, okay, go ahead. So he went to some, you know, monks, and he studied and he meditated and did a lot of, you know, austerities, and he got power, and he came back after 10 years. And he bows down to his teacher and says, I have great powers. Teacher says, what power do you have? He said, you know that river? I can walk on the river. So teacher says, okay, show it to me. So he does. He walks on the river and he walks back, you know, a mile that way and a mile. And he thinks the teacher will be very proud of him that he could do that. So teacher says, you spent 10 years to do that? He said, yeah. He said, I could do that in 25 cents. I could pay the boatman 25 cents and he would take me across the river and 25 cents to bring me back. So what I can do for 25 cents, you took 10 years? You know, for what is the use of that? I mean, it looks very impressive to us, you know, oh, somebody can. But unless you know the truth, unless you know who you are, otherwise you remain the same. You know, you are not changed. I mean, you are more accomplished, but you are still the same limited human being. So you have to know, get the self-knowledge. That is the more important siddhi. That is the more important accomplishment. And he says he becomes the seer of the absolute truth. What it means is that he knows the absolute truth, the Atman or the Self as me. I am that truth. I am that Atman. I am that reality. And he becomes a witness. He functions in the world as a witness. He watches what is happening in the world out of love and compassion. And then he becomes a saint. He becomes a prophet. And even for his own body, mind, and intellect, he watches. He becomes a witness. He functions in the world, does whatever is required, but understands that this body is not real. It's going to perish. This mind is going to go away. This intellect is going to change. But he focuses on the permanent self, that the true self, that is me. That understanding is called being seer of the absolute truth. So seer means not seeing God as outside or God as in the temple, but God as the life in me. And that is the goal of spirituality. And that's what the teacher is telling us, that instead of worrying too much, I mean, we do need to take care of our outer duties, but ultimately going inward and learning your true self is true accomplishment, that is true knowledge, that is the true goal, and that is what we practice in our meditation. We also, in our meditation, we focus on the true self, the spirit, what we call as the spirit or the consciousness, and we separate ourselves from the body, from the mind, from the intellect, from the thoughts, from the breath, and we stay as a witness. You know, we practice that every week, and that is what we should do in our meditation. And slowly, slowly, what will happen is that this truth will become evident. You know, it will need effort on our part, love for the cause, love for God, and a very sincere desire to know. And when you have all those, and when you meet the right teacher, the teacher can then guide us in the right direction, and ultimately it is a slow, gradual process. But if others could do it, we can also do it. If Jesus could do it, if Buddha could do it, Shankaracharya could do it, Swami Chinmayananda, all these great saints and prophets do it, we can also do it. So let us have that. And this verse is a very beautiful guide for us to apply in our life. Thank you. Any questions or comments? True. So what she's saying is that which is permanent cannot be contradicted, was there in past, present, and future, and is also there in waking, dream, and deep sleep. Waking, dream, and deep sleep. That means it's there in waking, even in dream, I'm aware of the dream. And even in deep sleep, I as the consciousness, I'm still there. That's why the body is functioning, and I'm aware when I wake up that I slept good. So that consciousness can never be negated. It is there in all three states. Yeah, but it's not actually the mind. It is the self within witnessing the mind. The mind also should become an object of. Initially, they say you let the mind watch the mind. But then later on, there is the consciousness that is even aware of the watcher. So the one who is aware. Yeah, that's the knower. That's the knower. Right. The real is one, the Atman, the self. And the unreal is this multiplicity of all these things that are changing. The mountains are changing, people are changing, buildings are changing, everything is changing, thoughts, ideas are changing. So that is all multiple, but the knower is only one. Appearing in many of all of us as separate, her consciousness, his consciousness, but in reality there is only one, which is there within and without us. Everywhere, all pervading.
God to watch me before I have my thought, and then I think it, and then I speak it. It must just be.
Yes. Yep.
Only you would just stop me now.
Right. No, he says he gives you freedom to think, and then you speak, and then afterward you regret. I shouldn't have said that. Oh, I wish I had. I can take my words back. Yeah, people always ask, how do I know that I am spiritually progressing? So there are three or four rough guidelines. One of them is that things that used to bother me a year or two ago don't bother me now. Where I have become, it's okay, kind of thing. Where I am more at peace with myself, more calm, more at peace. Where, it's like, when I was a child and then, somebody took away my toy, I would get so very upset. And then when I grow up, then, that little toy no longer, but then now my bike, nobody should take my bike or nobody should take my car. And for you and me, it is my house and my business. So these are all our toys. We have just grown from dolls, to bigger toys. But when I get to a state where, things are okay, and what is happening, there is a divine plan in all that, and I can watch, and I cannot get affected that much. So if I become more calmer, more at peace with myself, and more at peace with others, previously somebody said something, I would get very upset, or somebody made a mistake, and I would say, why does he not understand? Now I become more patient with that person, okay. Part of it, of course, happens with aging. As we get older, we become more patient. But internally also, I am not disturbed by others saying something to me or by doing something. So that is one sign that I am, spiritually getting more evolved. Second is, I'm happier. Am I happier now than I was last year? Happier not because of objects that I have acquired, but I am happy whether I have or don't have those objects. So whether I am happier. And the third is that, do I have a deeper understanding of who I am and what is this world and what is life? And I slowly come to experience that truth. So, that's how you know that. So you yourself would know that. And what I always try to do, I used to do that a lot more. This year I didn't do that so much, but I would sit down and take stock that in this past year, from January 1st to December 31st, have I come closer to my goal of spirituality? Do I know more? Do I understand more? Have I understood God more? Do I love Him more? Do I love people more? Do I give more of myself? So if you are doing that, if you are sharing and if you are helping and if you have more love and compassion, then you know that you are spiritually evolving. And interestingly, this concept of giving, you not only receive the spiritual benefit, but in my experience, you also receive material benefit because he is, and you don't give for that purpose, but you never lose by giving. Not only spiritually, but even in every way, you know, it's a win-win situation. People think by giving I lose. You don't lose. You never lose. And he's right, you know, St. Francis is right. In giving is that we receive. That is the only way, yes.
Yeah,